The Warden by Anthony Trollope. Episode 1.
Good morning, sir.
Oh, good morning to you.
Are you interested in attending the service, or do you merely wish to walk around the abbey?
Well, I'm not keen to walk around. I should prefer to attend the service.
Of course, sir. Unfortunately, sir, it doesn't start for another 3/4 of an hour, but if you would like to come in anyway...
Yes, I think I would. Well, I suppose on a visit to London one ought to see some sights. I shall sit myself down and see what I may from here. Well, Septimus Harding, this is a very big adventure. A great step is to be taken today. For there are some points in a man's life, are there not, where great steps must be taken. When a man must be bold, hold fast what he thinks is right. Indeed, I should have held fast much sooner. Oh, this has been, from the start, a very sorry affair. When I say from the start of the affair, I don't at all mean from the time that I became warden of the hospital. The past 10 years at Barchester have been, for the most part, happy years. No, I mean rather last June, and that mild evening when I was in the garden playing the cello to a small audience of men from the hospital. Bunce, dear old Bunce. He was among them, of course, and there were a few others. And a visitor arrived, walking slowly across the lawn.
Oh, no, who's this, then?
It's Mr. Bold, isn't it?
Good evening.
Mr. Bold, how very, very pleasant to see you.
Thank you, but I pray don't stop on my account. You know how fond I am of sacred music. Besides, you have an audience.
I do. And more patient and tolerant listeners you couldn't hope to find. I shall finish the piece, then.
Do so, Mr. Harding. Finish it. Play another piece after that, if you wish. I'd gladly delay our conversation. For believe me, it will cause nothing but unhappiness.
Thank you, Mr. Harding.
Goodbye, Mr. Harding.
Goodbye, Crumple. Goodbye, Gazy.
Well, you know, Mr. Bowl, you do not come here nearly as often as Eleanor and I would like. She is not at home, by the way, but I'm certain she won't be too long.
Well, actually, sir...
It's a pleasure to see you. And, of course, an evening visitor is worth 10 such in the morning. Morning visits are all formality and business, I find.
Yes. Yes, indeed. But I'm afraid I have rather reversed the order of things.
Who?
I owe you much apology for doing so. It is on business that I have called... I wish to speak to you about the hospital.
The hospital? Oh, very well. Speak, please. If you're seeking information, I'll tell you anything I can.
You're very kind. It's about the account.
Ah, well, then, I can tell you almost nothing. In respect to the hospital's finances, I'm as ignorant as a child. I know they pay me £800 per annum.
Yes.
But that, I fear, is pretty much all I can tell you. So, how are you keeping, Mr. Bolt? How is Mary, your dear sister?
We are both very well, thank you. Mr. Harding, regarding the hospital...
Yes, Chadwick's the fellow to see. He's the steward, you understand. The accounts are his business.
I've already spoken to Mr. Chadwick.
Oh.
Mr. Harding, I hope you won't object to discussing the hospital with me.
Well, I hope so, too. I'm aware that you are a man of, shall we say, reforming tendencies, Mr. Bolt. You have a very commendable enthusiasm for putting wrongs to right. So I take it you have found something wrong
with the situation here.
Mr. Harding.
When first I was appointed warden of Hiram's Hospital, well, that is, appointed choirmaster at the cathedral with the wardenship as a sort of adjunct to that post, there were some doubts expressed about my appointment. Well, you perhaps are too young to remember. Now, the position was offered me by the Bishop of Barchester quite soon after Eleanor's sister became married to Dr. Grantly, and so it went about that I had gained my preferment because my elder daughter possessed good looks. Well, I suppose it may well be true. One doesn't think about these things as deeply as one should. But it is about the accounts, you say.
Yes, Mr. Harding. In a sense, it has been drawn to my attention, and nothing that I have yet discovered about the matter has persuaded me the other way, that there is good reason to believe that the original requirements of the will, as drawn up by the founder of the hospital, are not being met.
Oh.
That the 12 old men who reside at Hiram's Hospital, the beadsmen, are being treated...
Yes?
Well, less favourably than they should be.
Less?
According to the letter of the will. Bearing in mind that the property, as left by the will, is now grown quite large. So, I have been asked to look into this discrepancy.
Discrepancy?
Yes. Just as, if you recall, I looked into the matter of the toll gate.
Oh, yes, indeed you did, and with success.
There is no personal enmity, quite the opposite, in what I am doing with regard to the hospital.
Oh, of course not. I presume you are of the opinion that I am not entitled to the £800 I received from the hospital.
I'm not certain yet, but...
You think... There is good reason to believe it. I understand.
Here comes Eleanor.
We'll talk no more on these matters. You'll join us for tea?
I think not.
This is a pleasant surprise. Good evening, Mr. Bowles.
Good evening, Miss Harding. Thank you all the same, sir, but it would, I feel...
I'm sorry I was not here to greet you.
Forgive me, please. I simply cannot stay. I do apologize. Miss Harding? Mr. Harding?
Mm-hmm.
Have the two of you had some sort of disagreement?
Disagreement? Oh, no, Eleanor. I wouldn't call it quite that.
Mr. Bold is a very determined and energetic man.
Yes, he is.
Sometimes, no doubt, he offends people by his zealousness. But all that he does because he thinks it is good and right.
I'm sure of that. Well, time for tea. Eleanor, my dear. Well, my dear.
I wish you would tell me what is the matter, Papa. If you and Mr. Bolt have fallen out, I shall be very angry with you both.
Oh, believe me, you will have no cause for that. £800 a year for 10 years. That's £8,000. To which perhaps I have no title. And which, if that is the case, I therefore ought to repay. I shall see the bishop tomorrow morning.
My dear Harding, I've heard nothing of any kind of protest. But there's no reason for alarm, surely. Send Mr. Bolt to the archdeacon. He'll settle it.
But
I'm blessed, you know, to have a son who is so very capable of settling things. Doubly blessed to have him as my archdeacon.
Yes, Bishop, but I would like this particular matter settled to my own satisfaction, if you understand me. I want to be certain for myself that the will is being administered correctly.
Yes, well, I suggest you have a word with the archdeacon. He'll set you right.
Bishop... Did you ever read John Hiram's will?
Read it? Yes, I think I did. Some time ago now, 35 years ago, I suppose, when I was first instituted here. It is an old will, that much I can tell you.
Yes, it was drawn up in the first half of the 15th century.
There you are, a very old will. Talk to the archdeacon, though, if you want the matter settled. He'll settle it.
Yes.
I wonder if this is an appropriate hour for some wine.
Bishop, if, as Mr. Bold has suggested...
I rather think it is.
If the will decrees that the proceeds of the property be divided fairly among the 12 old men at the hospital, who has the power or authority to alter that decree?
I have no idea, Hardy. Your wine.
Ah, thank you.
I imagine what happened was that the arrangement altered itself, as it were, over the years, so that what pertains now is confirmed by tradition and usage. Your health, Harding. A certain distance in rank and income must be maintained between the 12 poor and superannuated men and the warden who is responsible for them. Common sense applies, too. If the old men took what at present goes to the warden and the steward, they might no longer be very poor and no longer requiring charity, in which case there would be no need for a hospital. But go and see the archdeacon anyway. He'll settle it. You haven't touched a drink.
But if I saw him, if I went to see Dr. Grantly and found that I couldn't agree with him, though he might, as I'm sure he will, present the argument most forcefully and cogently, but if I still thought that the matter was not settled and that Mr. Bold might well be right and I was in the wrong, what then?
I'm so very sorry, Harding, that this business is troubling you, and I wish I could help. Of course, the Archdeacon... But anyway... Oh, Harding, my dear friend.
Good heavens! The vile insolence of the man!
Do come to bed, Archdeacon.
And he a friend of your sister's?
A close friend, Archdeacon.
The pestilent, interfering upstart! I trust, Susan, that your father has broken all relations with him?
Not that I have heard. It would be quite unlike him if he has.
He should cut the man off forthwith. Forbid any thought of an engagement with Eleanor.
But why?
Why, my dear? Because if Bold marries your sister, he will become my brother-in-law.
And mine.
Your father cannot allow Eleanor to marry a man who is bent on depriving him of his position, his income, and his home. Good heavens! And only imagine, if you dare, what further damage the traitor might attempt once he found himself within the enemy gates. No, he cannot marry Eleanor. Your father must refuse him, and your father must fight him.
That is hardly Papa's way, either.
He'll fight him, my love. I'll see to that.
Yes, Archdeacon. That is, I'm sure you'll try. Are you coming to bed?
Yes. Yes, my dear.
I do not like Mr. Bold.
That much, then, we can agree on.
He is a great deal too conceited for my taste.
And a great deal too much else, Susan.
But my sister likes him, so if she wants to marry him, she should.
Never.
In my view, it would be the best thing all round.
What?
Bold wouldn't trouble himself about the hospital then. I'm sure of it. Good night, Archdeacon.
Well, Chadwick, Dr. Grantly.
Anything new yet from Cox and Cummins?
Oh, indeed, yes. A letter from them which arrived this morning.
Ah.
They say that since proceedings have not yet been formally begun against us, there are no legal steps that we can take. But they do advise that at the appropriate time it might be expedient to consult that very eminent Queen's Counsel, Sir Abraham Haphazard.
Sir Abraham Haphazard? Oh, yes, Chadwick, I quite agree. He's the best man for us, I'm sure. Thorough churchman.
Very.
Sound conservative.
Extremely.
A good performer in the House, too, of course. Completely put down that scoundrel, do you recall, who's making a fuss about the Bishop of Beverley's income. Yes, he's our man. I think we should move quickly, Chadwick, before the other side think to get him. Thorough churchman as he is, he no doubt has his prize.
So tell us then, Abel Handy, what is the amount?
The amount? 100 pounds.
Oh, 100 pounds?
No less. 100 per yearly annum.
Yeah, is each one of us in the hospital entitled to it?
Aye, by law.
Who says it?
The lawyer says it, son. Mr. Finney, who's working for Mr. Bold. 100 pounds. It's ours by rights, and we shall have it.
Yes.
So, sign here, if you will.
Now, there's a difficulty, Abel Handy. For I've never learned to write my name.
Nor I.
Well, nor have I. Nor have most of us. But I put my mark, which Mr. Finney says is sufficient, and 5 more have done likewise. See? Even old Bell, and him lying sick in his bed.
Yeah, but the other difficulty, Abel, is whether we ought to be involved in this petition business at all.
Oh, we ought, Billy Gazy. We ought, if we each wants 100 pounds, that is.
Who's the petition to go to?
The bishop.
The bishop?
And copies of it will be sent to the newspapers.
The newspapers?
You'll never get all 12 men behind it, Abel Handy. Bunce wouldn't sign it if you threatened him with boils and locusts. Fave's too fond of the warden for that.
Yes, Job Sculpit, which is a particular annoyance.
Seeing as he can write his own name, for it would have looked well on the petition, that would. So if you sign, Job Sculpit, and 10 of us puts our marks, and we tell the bishop that Bunce is mad and couldn't be permitted to cast his judgment, why then, 'tis a powerful enough petition, I'd say. Yeah. Cast your judgment then, Job, and write your name.
Master Bold may try as he might. Master Bold may enlist all the forces of barbarism and iniquity. Master Bold may slither his way into the affections of the warden's younger daughter. Foolish girl to be deceived so easily, but his machinations shall be thwarted. Nothing in this time-honored place shall be tampered with. Nothing shall be changed. The goodly grace of the cathedral and its venerable institutions shall remain undisturbed. Ah, there he is. Warden!
Warden!
Archdeacon! Good morning. And to you. Eleanor.
Good morning, Dr. Grantly. How is Susan?
Mrs. Grantly is well and sends her love. I wanted to see you, Warden, concerning the hospital.
Ah, yes. Archdeacon...
It is quite clear, Harding, that the way to stop this fellow...
Excuse me, Dr. Grantly. Eleanor, my dear.
Yes, Papa?
Perhaps you would be good enough to go on ahead.
Yes, Papa.
Forgive me, but you see, she and John Bold.
Yes, yes, I'm perfectly acquainted, thank you, with the state of things between them. I'm rather trusting in you, Warden, to prevail upon your daughter to change all that.
Oh, indeed.
But that was not the prime reason for my seeing you.
Oh, come now, Job. You'll not go along with old Bunce, surely. Sign and have done with it.
I'm not sure. I'm thinking it over.
But it don't need thinking over. Tis as clear as day.
What do you think, Billy Gazy? Well, are you going to sign?
Oh, well...
Of course he is. He's not under Bunce's thumb, I know that much. He won't let the parson rob us. Here, Billy, take this pen.
Oh, I don't know.
Get hold of it, Grumpy, you old cripple.
Oh,
no, Billy, look what you... Oh, never mind. It'll do.
What, that? It's a blotch, not a mark.
It's Billy Gazy's blotch, and he made it, which is all that counts. That's 8 we've got now, Job.
The advice of Chadwick's attorney is that we consult Sir Abraham Haphazard.
Haphazard?
I think that this is very good advice. He'll put Master Bold in his place. Most certainly he will. I was also informed by Chadwick that a petition is being got up by those old men of yours. You are aware of this petition, I suppose.
Oh, yes.
Are they intending to send it to my father?
Well, I am afraid I have no idea.
But you've taken measures, have you, to obstruct it?
Measures? No.
Oh, Warden.
Why shouldn't they get up a petition?
Why shouldn't they? Why shouldn't they? I'll tell you why they shouldn't, Warden. And I shall tell them, too. Save them the trouble of taking the matter any further. Come, Warden, to the hospital.
Oh. 'Tis a poor thing in a man when he cannot stand up for himself. Are you going to sign, Job, or are you not?
Well,
no. Stop waving that pen about Job Sculpit and get your name on the paper.
I'll put a mark.
Ah, that's the stuff. We're all in the same boat now. Well, 9 of us are, which is getting close enough to what is needed. Yeah. old Bunce won't be too happy when he's... Morning, Bunce.
Won't be too happy when what, Abel Handy?
When he sees the petition with 9 marks upon it. Here.
Is your mark here, Job Sculpit?
Yes. And this is Crumple's mark. And this is Gazy's blotch. I would have signed it proper, but...
Oh, Job Sculpit, you're playing their game, are you? Oh, Job, what a fool you are. You're all fools playing their game, though they don't care whether you live or die. You think you'll get money from this business? You must be daft.
They'll get the money if there's money to be gotten. Then we'll fill your heads with all this nonsense in the first place. Why were you brought to this hospital? Have you all forgotten? You were brought here and you were glad to come because the world had turned against you. Because you couldn't earn your daily bread no more. It was not so you'd get rich, but so you could have food and shelter. And anyhow, aren't you all as rich in your ways as his reverence is in his? Aren't you getting all you hoped for and much more?
I don't know.
We want what John Hiram left us. What's ours by law?
Law? The law wasn't made to help poor men like us.
What's that about then?
What that's about is what I came to tell you. We've all of us to gather in the quadrangle or to listen to the Archdeacon.
Must I stay, Archdeacon?
Yes, you must. For heaven's sake, Harding, don't let us have division in the camp at the very outset. We shall require a long pull, a strong pull, and above all, a pull together.
Shall we? I'd so much sooner not be involved in any pulling. I'd so much sooner remain quiet. Really.
Remain quiet? Remain quiet? Good heavens, do you wish to be ruined in quiet?
Well, yes, if I am to be ruined.
Well, that's nonsense, Warden. Nonsense. Are they all assembled? Is this the 12 of them?
11. George Bell is in bed.
What? At this hour?
He is sick.
Ah, right.
Now, my men. I want to say a few words to you concerning the will of John Hiram. And concerning a certain petition which I believe it is your intention to address to my lord the bishop, and which expresses the opinion that you do not receive from John Hiram's estate all that is due. Now, what is it, pray, that you are asking for? What is it you want, exactly, that you haven't got here?
£100 a year.
£100.
To each of us, each year. You're great.
Oh, dear. Come now. Do you honestly think that John Hiram, when he drew up his will all those centuries ago, intended it that £100 a year be given to 12 old men? Men who in their prime earn no more than half a crown each day? Is this what he had in mind when he built his hospital? Of course not. He meant that 12 poor, worn-out labourers who could labour no more, the infirm, the blind and the like, who must starve and die a miserable death if not protected by the hand of charity, he meant that such men should come here to the hospital and should find shelter, find also a little leisure in their old age to make their peace with God. That is what he meant, I assure you. Without having read the will, you are complaining that the will's instructions have not been met. You are demanding £100 a year. £100? Good heavens, you must be mad! I tell you this, while you remain at this hospital, you will never receive 100 pence more than what you have now. Indeed, it is very possible that on account of this disgraceful affair, you will even find yourself with something less than what you've been getting.
Oh, no, Archdeacon, no.
Do not be surprised if there are changes. My lord, the bishop, and the warden here...
No, my friends, there will be no changes as long as you and I are together here. You will be no worse off, I assure you.
God bless you, Reverend.
God bless you.
God bless you.
Forgive me, Dr. Grantly, I interrupted your speech.
I suppose I have finished now.
Dear friends, the Archdeacon has said all that he wished to. Our thanks for your kind attention.
Thank you, Your Reverence.
So, I made things pretty plain to them, I think.
Oh, yes. Pretty plain.
One must be plain, you know, with this sort of people. Otherwise, one will not be understood. But they understood me, Warden.
Yes, Archdeacon. Yes, I believe they did.
It is very odd, do you not think, John? Why
two notes inviting each of us to the same party.
I can't imagine.
Perhaps a great change is coming upon the world, and Mr. Harding has decided to be fashionable.
How much easier this would all be if he could bear me ill will. Or rather, if he could show me that he does. Instead, he must write to me and express himself in generous, cordial terms, and make me feel much more of an unpardonable wretch than if he had turned on me in anger, and with sharp words exposed my every fault.
I suppose, since we have been given separate invitations, we must write out separate acceptances.
Yes, Mary. Or rather, you must accept on your own behalf. But I'm afraid I shall not be going to the party.
You won't? Why, heaven not?
I wish I could, but I fear I cannot go to Mr. Harding's house for the time being. Not as a friend.
Oh, brother, dearest. Have you quarrelled with Eleanor?
No, not with Eleanor. Nor with Mr. Harding, indeed. I rather wish we had quarrelled.
What do you mean?
The situation, Mary, is that I have taken up the plight of the 12 beadsmen of Hiram's Hospital. It's a long story, and I shall explain it to you in due course, but the upshot of it is that I intend to see if justice can be done for these poor folk of the city so that they can receive what they are entitled to under law. And as a result of this inquiry, it may well be that what has previously gone into the pocket of the warden will henceforth be directed to the benefit of the men of the hospital.
I see. And why must you do this, John? Why must you take up their plight?
Why should anyone? On that principle, injustice is never to be opposed, and the weak, the oppressed, and the poor are never to be given help.
But you are a friend of Mr. Harding.
Yes, or at least I was. On matters such as this, however, private motives and feelings must never be allowed to interfere. I esteem Mr. Harding, but does that mean I must turn a deaf ear to the dictates of my conscience?
And what then of Eleanor?
If she has the kind of spirit I think she has, she'll not condemn me.
But you love her!
Yes.
And I tell you now that she loves you.
I have hoped that she might. But I cannot, because of a love that she and I may share, go back from this task. Private feelings, as I say, must not interfere.
You will break her heart, John. You will break your own. Oh, why must you do this? Why must you play the great reformer, the righter of wrongs?
I'm not playing at anything.
Do what you were trained to do and heal the sick.
Oh, Barchester has a legion of doctors and surgeons. There isn't enough sickness to go round. But the number of reformers, as you put it, are somewhat less, and there is plenty of business for them.
What good will you do these men from the hospital? You will never make them happier than they are now.
Mary.
Give up this dream, John. Give up this grand dream of justice. Give up this madness.
My dear sister, you don't understand.
I understand the misery you'll bring on yourself, and on Eleanor, and Mr. Harding, and me. Oh, may I at least write to Eleanor and say that you will go to the party?
No, Mary. No, you may not.
Papa?
Yes, my dearest. I'm just going to my study to collect the cello. I've been persuaded to join the band.
Papa?
I think we can say that it is going pleasantly enough, though I wish the Archdeacon wouldn't shout so loudly when he's at the card table.
Papa, Mr. Bold is not here tonight.
No, I did write to him.
Well, do you know why he has not come?
Hmm?
Papa?
Well, my dear, I could guess. Has Mary not spoken about him at all?
Well, she gave an excuse for him, but it was clear enough it was not the true reason. I know something is wrong between the two of you. That day when he was here...
Yes. Tell me, Eleanor, sweetest Nell, do you like Mr. Bowe much?
Do I like him?
Well, like is a poor word. Do you love him?
Why do you ask me, Papa?
Dearest child, there is, as you say, something wrong between Mr. Bold and myself, and I will explain it to you, and you will understand why he is not here this evening. But listen, dear Nell, if you loved John Bold before, if you love him now, there is no cause why you should not go on loving him. He is a good man, I'm certain of that.
I shall always judge my father to be right, and those who oppose him I shall judge to be wrong. Of this latter number I shall be forgiving to those who do not know him, considering they are mistaken through ignorance or error of judgment. But if I see him attacked by those who know him, or say that they do, and who therefore should love him and revere him, I will, I fear, be much less charitable. Oh, Eleanor.
Well?
Well, sister?
May I ask what Eleanor said in her letter?
Oh, well, just how sorry she is that I wasn't able to attend the party and what a success it was. Is that the Jupiter?
It is the Jupiter. It contains an article which will be of interest to you. A leading article. I will leave you to gloat over it in private.
A leader in the Jupiter. My cause, my crusade, taken up by the Jupiter. Well, here we are. We are informed that the warden of an old almshouse attached to Barchester Cathedral is in receipt of 25 times the annual income appointed for him.
Yes!
Now things will begin to move. It is impossible to conceive a case of greater injustice here, here. On what foundation, moral or divine, is grounded the warden's claim to the large income he receives for doing nothing? Does he ever ask himself, when he stretches wide his clerical palm? But I'd rather they hadn't made a personal attack on Mr. Harding.
Does his conscience never entertain the question of his right to such subsidies, or is it possible that the subject never so presents itself?
Thank you, Archdeacon. Perhaps Harding has heard enough. Have you heard enough, Harding?
Pretty well enough, I think.
It's monstrous. It's diabolical.
What am I to do? What am I to do?
Well, I suppose you might try writing to the Jupiter and presenting an opposing view.
Oh, yes. And find yourself smothered with ridicule or thoroughly shaken like a terrier shakes a rat. Mm. Accidentally omit some word in your answer, Warden, and you'll be branded ignorant. Make some trivial mistake, and it'll be interpreted as a falsehood or a blasphemy. I fear there is no point in resisting an attack from the Jupiter, even if one has the best of cases. In such matters, the Jupiter is all-powerful.
Yes. Sells a great many copies, too.
40,000, Warden.
No.
And each copy, I understand, is read by 5 persons at least.
Oh, dear, what am I to do?
We could have anticipated this attack, Warden. Oh. These are words, merely. And everyone knows that the paper takes up any affair, whether the substance of it is right or wrong, true or false, so long as it thinks that by so doing, it can promulgate its own prejudices.
Yes.
Everyone knows that. And everyone who knows you, Warden, will think none the worse of you because of this small thunderclap from the Jupiter.
So if I am not to write to the paper...
At the very best, it would only serve to remind readers of what they had already half forgotten.
What is then to be done?
We must wait.
Wait for what, Archdeacon?
Why? For some word from Sir Abraham Haphazard, of course. He's our man.
Yes, Bunce, what is it?
I just came to tell your reverence how sorry I am. I mean about this matter which is bothering you so sorely.
Yes, thank you.
And also, I hope there'll be a speedy end to it.
Thank you, Bunce.
Also, your reverence, I wanted to inform you that I did not sign the petition.
Well, that was very kind of you, Bunce, and single-minded. Thank you.
What am I to do then if I am not to write to the Jupiter? What if the Archdeacon is wrong? What if there are people spread throughout the land who have read that article and who believe what they read? How can I persuade them that I am not a thief? But I'm not an avaricious priest who has snatched money from the poor, bread from the hungry. I simply took what I was offered. But even that was wrong, perhaps.
I fear it's your fault, Archdeacon. I told you from the beginning how it would end.
Good heavens, how can you say so?
You shouldn't have been so against the idea of John Bold becoming your brother-in-law. You shouldn't have protested so violently about him visiting Papa's house.
But Susan, my dear...
If it wasn't for your opposition, you know, it is quite probable that he would have married Eleanor by now, and this whole sorry business, I'm sure, would never have been contemplated. Oh. You've put him in a huff.
I shall fight it out with him, my dear.
Yes, I knew you would.
I will fight, and I will win.
no surrender. Sir Abraham Haphazard.
Ah, Sir Abraham.
He'll soon be sending us his opinion, and then we'll see what Master Bowl is made of. Sir Abraham, you know, has had to devote much of his time recently to the preparation of the Convent Custody Bill.
The Convent Custody Bill?
Yes, Susan. Enabling Protestant clergymen over the age of 50 to search nuns who are suspected of possessing treasonable papers or Jesuitical symbols. The bill will have 137 clauses, I believe, so Sir Abraham has been rather busy.
Busy or not, Sir Abraham will not get Eleanor a husband, nor will he get Papa another income when the poor man has been hounded out of the hospital. So, what will you do then, Archdeacon, when you have both Papa and my sister on your hands?
Excuse me, Archdeacon, but Mr. Chadwick is waiting.
Chadwick? He was in London yesterday, my dear. He may well have important news. I'll see him in my study.
Well, Dr. Grantley, here it is.
All this is Sir Abraham's opinion.
It is. Now, the thrust of it...
Yes, quickly tell me the thrust of it.
According to Sir Abraham, the warden and the steward of the hospital, viz. Respectively Mr. Harding and myself...
Yes, yes.
...are merely the hospital's paid servants. The defendants in the case should, if anyone, be the Corporation of Barchester, or possibly the chapter, or indeed your father.
So Master Bowl is on the wrong scent, eh?
That is Sir Abraham's opinion. But he also believes that we're a baffled bold whichever way. If he'd gone for the bishop, for instance, we'd have argued that your father is technically not liable, since he has never formally consented to overall responsibility for the hospital.
Good, good.
In every case, says Sir Abraham, the legal points are so nice that we can force Bold into £15,000 cost before he can resolve them. And Mr. Bold doesn't have that kind of money.
Oh, Chadwick, this is excellent news. I told you Sir Abraham was our man.
You did. You did. You will take pains, won't you, to ensure that this copy of Sir Abraham's opinion is not seen or its contents divulged?
I will.
We wouldn't wish to teach the enemy how to fight its own battle.
Absolutely not.
Your father and Mr. Harding, however, may be given so much of the opinion as will satisfy them that the matter is going well.
Certainly. I'll see them both tomorrow.
Under the law, then, I am a paid servant.
That is correct. You and Chadwick.
With an allotted stipend.
Correct. I have to say I rather regret the use of the word servant and a stipend. I hope you won't take offence at them, Harding.
Oh, by no means. A rose, you know.
Formal terminology, that's all, as expressed in Sir Abraham's opinion. The point is this. You're no lawyer, Warden, so I'll put it very simply. Since it is necessary to have servants for the use of the hospital, their level of pay must depend on the going rate, according to market value.
Dear, dear.
And it can be fixed only by those who manage the hospital.
Oh, well, who does manage the hospital?
Well, that's another question. Let Bold and his friends scratch their heads over that one. The fact is, the action is at present being brought against you and Chadwick, and this is your defense. And a perfect defense, too, is it not? Most satisfactory. And completely conclusive.
But on this argument, I might as well have 1,600 a year as 8, if the managers choose to give it to me.
Warden.
And surely I myself must be one of the managers, whoever the others might be. Perhaps, indeed, I am the chief manager, so that can hardly be a decent and proper arrangement.
Warden, please. It is very simple. The question is whether a tribe of cheating attorneys and pestilent dissenters are to interfere with an arrangement which is essentially just and which is serviceable to the church,
yes, yes.
Or whether we shall beat them off. Pray, let us not be splitting hairs, not at least amongst ourselves. Otherwise there'll be no end to this business, and no end to the cost.
Are you any happier now, Harding?
Forgive me, but... I find it... too distressing. If
this stipend of £800 a year is my due. If I have a just and honest claim to it, as God well knows I always thought I had, then, well, I am anxious to retain it. I have myself and my daughter to look after it. My age, I have become accustomed to certain comforts. Also, I am anxious to demonstrate that I am right, that I have acted properly in the past, but I cannot do it. Not at this price.
Not at this price? What do you mean, Warden?
I cannot endure what has already been said of me, what has been written of me. Bishop, I can't be indifferent. I can't be contented. Would you, my lord, expect me to be so?
No, no.
I cannot do it.
My dear Harding, you will not be asked to do anything that is painful. You will only do what your heart tells you is right. Is that not the case, Archdeacon?
Well, my lord, I see the matter thus wise. It is not only ourselves we have to look to here. The interest of the church is in our charge. We cannot abandon what has been entrusted to us. We cannot yield on this occasion, else nothing will be safe from attack, and the Church of England will fall altogether.
Oh.
There is no justice in the charges brought against you. You know that. You are convinced of your own honesty, and yet you would yield. Give up the fight. And why?
Cowardice, Warden.
Oh, no.
Cowardice.
Cowardice, dear, oh dear.
You owe it to the church to fight this fight. You owe it to my father to support him. You owe it to those wardens who preceded you at Hiram's Hospital to assert the legality of their position. You owe it to those who are to come after you to maintain the wardenship undamaged as you received it. And you owe it to us all, so that in perfect brotherhood we may support our great cause.
Oh, dear.
You haven't eaten very well, Papa.
No. No, I've managed as well as you. I'm very sorry, my dear. I wish I could be in better spirits.
Bunce was telling me that good news was expected from London.
Good news? Ah, yes. Good news from London. I know I am not the first. Other servants of the church have been attacked, and most viciously too, for taking what was not theirs, allegedly. For growing rich by doing nothing, allegedly. I have read of such cases. I have heard the gossip. And it has made me white.
Yes, Papa.
It has made me wonder how they could possibly carry on. These people who were attacked, how they were able to face their fellow men when their names had been bandied about, when so much abuse had been heaped on them. And now, it's happening to me. It's happening to me. What will you do this evening, Eleanor?
I hadn't thought, Papa.
Now, the weather is very pleasant. You mustn't stay in on my account.
But you are so very sad.
Yes, well, we all must have our share of sadness.
Papa, won't you tell me what it is about?
Well, you know what it is about, my dearest.
But this is a fresh sorrow, I think, on top of what was already there. And I want to share your sorrow, Papa, even though I cannot make it disappear.
Sweetest Nell.
We are everything to each other now. Please, Papa, tell me what the matter is.
My own child.
Papa!
It isn't right. Why should you be made unhappy too? It may come to that, of course. We may have to leave this place, and that will be a great cause of sorrow. Until then...
But is that all, Papa?
If leaving here is our only sadness, let us leave this house and have light hearts elsewhere. Oh, Papa, you and I could be happy wherever we were, as long as we had bread to eat and our hearts were light.
Yes, dearest Nell, I think we could be. And yet...
You must have no doubts on my account, Papa. My happiness does not depend upon a pony carriage or a fine drawing room. Papa, this place cannot gladden my heart, not while there is a question about your honour in staying here. Put me in the smallest of tiny cottages, and I could truly be as contented as the day is long. Provided I could see that you were happy too.
No. My sweetest, most precious Nell. I would leave this house today, believe me. I would give up the wardenship. My life here these past 10 years has been a pleasant one, I know, but I fear that everything that has made it so is somehow tainted. And yet, I think I must attempt to stay. To give it up is what I want. But there are obligations, you see. Obligations to others and to myself. I should not relish being called a coward, any more than I have enjoyed being charged with avarice.
Eleanor, do you have a few minutes to spare?
I have the whole day to spare if you need it.
I must ask for your help with regard to the hospital.
Yes?
I want it arranged that I can talk with your brother. Tomorrow, if he has returned from London by then.
No, by then he will have gone back.
Oh, so he is here in Barchester.
He arrived unexpectedly this morning. You know, Eleanor, I think this whole affair is a sort of extravagant act of folly. He spent a week in town seeing lawyers and members of Parliament and people in newspaper offices. And now he is here on further business. But tonight he plans to take the mail train and to be in London again. So much rushing and chasing.
Might Mr. Bold have time, do you suppose, to let me speak to him today?
We will make sure that he does. He is over at his horrid attorney's at present, but he should be at the house by luncheon.
It is very important that I see him.
You shall see him, dearest sister.
Thank you. I wish you would not call me sister.
But of course I must, since sisters we are in all but name.
No, Mary.
And you must call me sister too, and no more Mr. Bold, please. He is John, and you shall call him so. This business of the hospital will in time, in quick time, I hope, be settled. John is suffering from a temporary madness only. When he discovers the extent of the hurt that he is causing your father and yourself, he will come to his senses.
I hope and pray that he will.
And then, dearest sister? Why then?
No. No, you must not have any thoughts about me and Mr. Bold. You must not say any more about that sort of thing, even in a joking way.
I wasn't joking, Eleanor. But will you tell me why you wish to see him?
I want simply to beg him to give up this action of his. Give it up before my father is injured any further.
Yes, and then?
Why, when I have begged him, then I very much hope that your brother might relent.
I think it is more than possible that he will. But when he has relented, dear Eleanor, what then?
Mary, whatever there was between myself and Mr. Bold cannot continue.
Of course it can and will. It is the most natural thing in the world that, having relented, he will ask you there and then to be his wife, and everything will end quite happily.
No, Mary.
But Eleanor...
No.
Having demonstrated his better nature in yielding to you, might he not be rewarded?
No. That would be wrong. I am not ashamed to beg from Mr. Bold and urge him to confer this great favour upon Papa, but it is as Papa's daughter that I will plead, and no other terms will be permitted in the bargaining.
And yet you love John. I know you do. And he loves you, Eleanor, better than anything in the world.
Well, Mary, this is nonsense.
But you do love him. You love him with all your heart. Eleanor? There. I knew it.
It makes no difference, though.
Does it not?
No. Not to the favour I must ask of him. And Mary, you must tell him nothing.
Concerning the purity and depth of your love for him, you mean?
Oh, you are the cruelest of girls. And the kindest.
Well now, time is moving on. I must make a start on copying out Finney's notes on the will, write a letter to Tom Towers, in case I fail to see him tomorrow, and advise him that the notes may well be of interest to readers of the Jupiter. And I ought to write to Eleanor, too, imploring her to look upon me with understanding and compassion. Is it to be the case, I shall ask her, that my resolve to carry out what is, after all, my public duty should mean that I am lowered in your estimation? Or words to that effect? And while I'm at it, I should write to her father as well, imploring him likewise to look upon me with understanding, etc. Something along the lines of, is it to be the case that these recent untoward events should be a bar to our ancient friendship, or to an even closer tie? Perhaps it would be better to wait until Mr. Harding has lost his income and his home. Oh, must it come to that? And then ask for Eleanor's hand in what might be interpreted as a gesture of reconciliation? Or of extreme insensitivity? What if you have lost your home, Mr. Harding? What if you have lost your income, too? You're about to acquire a son-in-law. Oh, best of all, I should give up this business entirely. Drop the lawsuit. Go to Australia and make a fresh start. With Eleanor, of course. Oh, what am I to do? I love her. Perhaps I should blow out my brains.
Well, he's home. This is the coat he took with him this morning. Shall I tell him you are here?
Yes. No. Wait. How's my hair?
Your hair is perfect.
Look, this curl, just here.
That curl just there is very pretty. And anyway, I would have thought a curl or two out of place quite becomes a young woman lodging an appeal on her father's behalf. John?
Yes, Mary.
John, there is a visitor.
A visitor, but you know her, a little tired.
It is Eleanor Harding.
Miss Harding?
Yes, and she is coming in to speak to you.
Very well.
He's ready to see you, sister dear.
You must not leave me alone with him, Mary, whatever you do. Promise me you won't.
After you, Eleanor. Mr. Bowles.
Miss Harding, this is a...
How do you
most
do?
Pleasant surprise, thank you. I'm very well. How are you?
I am well. I have good enough health, at least.
Splendid. I'm so glad to hear it. Excellent.
Perhaps Eleanor would like to be invited to take a seat.
Of course. Forgive me. Do sit down, Miss Harding. Mary. I am sorry that I've seen so little of you of late. I have been required to spend some time in London.
Yes.
What a fatuous place London is. And what a delight when one gets back to Barchester. It's very hot, don't you think?
It is very hot.
And how is your father? Forgive me, I interrupted you.
My father, Mr. Bold, is not very well. And it is expressly to speak about my father that I am come here.
I am sorry your father isn't well. I hope it's nothing too serious.
He is unwell because he is unhappy. He is very unhappy on account of this affair of the hospital. You would pity him, Mr. Bold, if you could see how wretched it has made him.
Oh, Miss Harding.
Anyone would pity him, I think, but you would pity him especially, Mr. Bold, because you are his friend. He is much altered. His cheerfulness has all gone, and his sweet temper and the kind, happy tone that was in his voice. You would hardly know him if you met him.
Miss Harding.
As I say, he is not well. And I do believe that if this business goes on, if it goes on, he will die.
Die?
Oh, Eleanor!
I am sure, as is Papa, that it was not you, Mr. Bold, who wrote those things in the newspaper.
No, Miss Harding. I can tell you most assuredly that it was not.
Such an act of cruelty would be beyond you, I know. But, Mr. Bold, that article in the paper, I tell you, it has nearly killed him. To be called avaricious, to be called dishonest...
I have never used those terms of him.
No, but others have. And if this goes on, if such things are written again, it will kill Papa. You must realize he does not care about the income from the hospital.
Of course he doesn't.
Money isn't at all important to Papa.
I know of nobody less touched by material possessions.
Thank you. It's good to hear you say so. I can't bear the idea that people should think unjustly of Papa. He would give up the hospital altogether, only the Archdeacon has told him it would be an act of cowardice and desertion and one which would damage the church, so he cannot leave, can he? Not, I mean, because the Archdeacon has told him he mustn't, but because it wouldn't be right.
I understand. Miss Harding, it would be impossible for anyone who knows your father personally to accuse him for one moment.
He would leave the hospital if he could. Leave it tomorrow. Give up the house and the income, and I do so wish that he would. In all this business, it is he who has to bear the punishment. It is he who suffers. And why? What wrong has he done? How has he deserved this persecution? Dearest Papa, who never had an unkind thought in his life, who never said an unkind word.
Oh, Miss Harding, I have not argued that your father is in any way to blame.
Then why must he be persecuted? Why must he be made so wretched? Why did you begin all this?
Well, I felt that in the particular circumstance...
Mr. Bold, why?
I was impelled
Mr.
to...
Mr. Bold! I want you to abandon this proceeding against my father. Mr. Bold, I implore you, abandon it. Do not destroy a man who has loved you so well. Spare his life. Spare his reason. For either his life or his reason will pay the forfeit, believe me, if this goes on.
Oh, Miss Harding. What can I say to her? She has destroyed me utterly. Of course I should abandon the proceeding. Of course I must show compassion towards Mr. Harding. But if I do, what then will become of me?
Mr. Bowles?
Will I be contented? Having renounced a cause that had justice and fairness on its side, will I be happy to see this matter progress and me no longer part of it?
John, you must speak to her.
For that's the other thing. The matter will progress, whether I stay with it or no. But how can I say as much to Eleanor? Dare I tell her that it has gone quite beyond my control? I have raised a storm, a wild and angry storm. And whatever I do now, I know I cannot quell it.
The Warden by Anthony Trollope. Episode 2.
Oh, this is a very hard stone step to be set on. Ooh, and a cold one, too. But it is at least a place to be sat, and full of wonders as London is, I do not much relish the prospect of tramping its streets till nightfall. So I will sit here, opposite this fine piece of statuary. Ah, William Pitt. Indeed. And he looks every bit as vexed with matters as I am. Oh, if it all somehow could have been avoided. I do not blame John Bold. In seeking to reform the hospital, he acted, I'm sure, out of the purest and truest of motives. It would have been best, I suppose, if I had never taken on the wardenship in the first place. If I'd never got the lovely house, the £800 a year. But it never occurred to me that what I was doing was wrong.
Mr. Bold, I want you to abandon this proceeding against my father. Mr. Bold, I implore you, do not destroy a man who has loved you so well. Spare him. Spare his life. Spare his reason. for either his life or reason, we'll pay the forfeit, believe me, if this goes on.
Oh, Miss Harding, there is...
Mr. Bold.
I...
Surely, dearest brother, you cannot refuse her.
I would give her my soul, Mary, if it would serve her.
No, Mr. Bold, do not speak so. I ask nothing for myself. And what I ask for my father, it cannot harm you to grant.
John?
I say it again, sister. I would give her my soul.
No, no, Mr. Bold.
Everything I have is hers, if she will accept it. My house, my heart, everything. Every hope I have is fixed on her. And when I see her in sorrow, as I do now, every nerve in my body suffers.
Mr. Bold.
No man could love her better than I do.
No, please. There must be no talk of love between us. Simply tell me, if you will, whether you intend to protect my father from the evil you have brought on him. Whether you will allow him to live out his days in peace.
I will do anything for you. Oh, Ellen, let me tell you how much I love you.
No, no, you shall not tell me. That is very wrong of you. Tell me instead that father is safe from harm. Promise me that he is. I will not leave you till you do. I'll cling to you in the street, kneel down and entreat you before the public gaze. Promise me, Mr. Bold. Promise me that he is safe.
You must speak to her, John, and you must accede to her request. You are not a cruel man.
No, indeed. Nor would you be false to me. If you give me your word, I know you will keep it. Give me your word, Mr. Bold, and I will let you go. Mr. Bold...
Well, then, I give you my word.
John!
All that I can do for your father, I will.
Then may God Almighty bless you forever and ever.
They've already writ about you once, Your Reverence.
Yes, Bunce. But once, it seems, was not enough. The Jupiter did not quite exhaust the topic, and so the Jupiter has come to it again.
Have they changed their minds about you, Your Reverence, seeing the error they made?
No, Bunce, I doubt very much if they have. That is assuming, of course, that what they wrote about me in the first instance was indeed an error. I've not read the piece yet, Bunce. I confess I've been putting off the dreadful hour. Such cowardice, eh? Well, here we are. Dr. Grantly has been kind enough to mark his copy for me. In red ink. Come, I'll read it. It cannot be any worse than I imagine it to be.
I must go now.
No, Miss Harding, not yet. Please. Allow me to explain just what it is I can do for your father, and what, I fear, may be beyond my scope.
That is very sensible of you, John. It wouldn't be right for Eleanor to be under any misapprehensions on this matter, would it, Eleanor?
No, I don't suppose it would.
Oh, why don't we all sit down, so that we're comfortable? John, if you would sit on the sofa.
By all means.
And I shall sit on the sofa here, and Eleanor shall sit on the sofa too, between us. Come, sweetest sister.
Very well.
There. What a fine triumvirate we make. Speak, John. Speak to your sisters.
You've read nothing yet that was about yourself, Your Reverence? Unless I was dozing.
No, Bunce. The writer has dealt with other, loftier clerical figures first. But now I think... Yes, here we are. We also feel it is our duty in this regard to return to the question of the Barchester almshouse, which we have already had cause to place before our reader's attention. We do this because, in response to a petition signed by the old men of the almshouse...
Not all of them, not all of them.
No, Bunce.
They couldn't make me sign it.
No, Bunce. I'm very grateful I am to you for your support and comradeship. And in defense of an action which was taken on their behalf...
No, not on my behalf.
By a gentleman acting solely on public grounds...
They mean Mr. Bold, do they?
Yes, Bunce. In defense, we say, of the action which has been brought against the warden of the almshouse, Mr. Septimus Harding. A plea has been set up by the leaders of the church in Barchester. This plea, supporting the warden's practice of taking for himself 3/5 of the charity's annual revenue, is one we know will be particularly revolting to the minds of true English
churchman.
Oh, dear, Bunce.
Oh, dear. It argues that what Mr. Septimus Harding receives is his stipend as a servant of the almshouse, and that he is not himself responsible for calculating the amount that he receives.
Well, isn't that true?
Such a line of defense might be used with respect to a bricklayer employed on an almshouse building or a woman who cleans it, but we feel that we do not much care for a clergyman of the Church of England. For a clergyman of the Church of England who could allow such an argument to be put into his mouth.
Is that the end of the piece, Your Reverence?
No. There's more yet. But I fear, Bunce, that it has already become as bad as I imagined it might be, and even worse. I've read enough.
Of course, I cannot guarantee that the legal action will cease. There may be others who will wish to take it up, though I doubt it. All I can say, Miss Harding, is that the lawyers in the case have received their instruction directly from me, and indeed their monies. I will advise them at the first available opportunity that I wish the case to be dropped.
What about the Jupiter?
Oh, the Jupiter, yes. Well, that will not be so easy, I fear. Despite what some folk in Barchester have said, I have not written any of the newspaper copy myself, or directly requested that it be written. I was never in a position to do that.
But you do know Tom Towers, do you not, John? And it was Tom Towers who wrote that leading article.
I do know him, yes. And I believe he did indeed write the piece. I believe, too, that there is another leader in today's edition.
Oh, no.
I haven't seen it myself.
Is it not possible for you to ensure that nothing further will be written?
No, Miss Harding, it is not. But I will call upon Tom Towers when I am in London, and I will attempt to persuade him. At the very least, I hope that I could prevail upon him, if he writes again about the affair, to desist from any personal allusions to your father.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bald. And now, really, I must go.
So soon, Miss Harding.
I must hurry back and tell Papa the good news. I'm greatly obliged to you, Mr. Bald. Papa will be so very touched by your kindness.
May I not, before you go, say one word to you on my own behalf?
Mr. Bold.
I shall fetch your bonnet, sister dear.
No, Mary, don't go. I'll fetch it myself.
It's quite all right. It's quite all right, Eleanor.
Miss Harding.
Yes, Mr. Bold.
Miss Harding. Eleanor. I love you.
No, Mr. Bold. No, no.
Allow me to speak.
No.
I love you, Eleanor. More than I have loved anyone in this world.
No.
I love you more than anyone has loved you.
No, no.
I love you more than anyone ever could love you.
No, no,
I love you, Eleanor. I love you. Want you for myself. Provided, of course, that your father is agreeable to the notion. And that you have no aversion to it. And that there is no one else, no other preference. Might I ask you if there is anyone else?
There is no one else. Mr. Bold.
Of course, I dare not hope that you are able to reciprocate my love. That is, love me as much as I love you, sweetest, dearest Eleanor. But I must ask you, nonetheless, will you be my wife?
Eleanor.
I have some news for you, Papa.
Yes, and I have some for you.
Oh. Well then, for I am determined to outdo you, Papa, I have two pieces of news. But you first.
I am going to London.
London?
Yes, my dear. I intend to settle matters one way or another. I am afraid, Eleanor, that there are some things which cannot be endured, which must not be endured.
Papa, what has happened? Well, I had such good news about the hospital. Do not tell me now that I am too late.
What is your good news, Eleanor?
The lawsuit is over.
Ah.
I have just come from speaking with Mr. Bold, and he assures me that it will be abandoned. There is no further cause for misery on that score, Papa. The whole business is closed.
I see.
But is that not good news, Papa?
Well, if Mr. Bold thinks he has been wrong, if he thinks he has done wrong, then of course he must do now what he believes is best. But whatever he does, he cannot make me change my mind.
Oh, Papa, I thought you would have been so happy. I thought everything would...
Mr. Bold may have given up this particular enterprise, my dear, but I fear that there are other men he has engaged upon it who are beyond his control. See, on my desk, today's Jupiter.
The Jupiter.
When you have read the article there, you will understand why it is I cannot change my mind. I no longer wish to be warden of Hiram's Hospital. It is not worth the price.
Oh, Papa.
Mr. Bold has seen fit to drop the case, but he cannot unwrite what has been written about me. He cannot arrange it that the Jupiter's article won't be read by every clergyman in Oxford. Nay, by every gentleman in the land. He can't do that. Any more than he can dispute the truth of every word that's written in that piece. He can't dispute it, and nor can I. You see, I have no right to be warden of the hospital, Eleanor.
No right, Papa?
I have no right to £800 a year, no right to this house, no right to spend in luxury what was intended for charity. So I trust that Mr. Bold has not abandoned the case for my sake. For my sake, he should certainly not do that.
No, Papa.
Here is the Jupiter, my dear. The article is marked in red ink, should you wish to read it.
Yes, Papa.
Oh, but you said there were two items of news you had to tell me. What was the other, my dear?
The other? Yes. I will tell you it, Papa. But not now.
When Pantagruel was born, there was no man more amazed or confused than his own father, Gargantua. For when he saw on the one hand his newly born son, and on the other his wife, newly dead in childbirth, he was gravely torn as to whether he should be delighted at the arrival of the one, or should mourn the departure of the other. One moment. One moment. Come.
Dr. Grantly.
Mr. Bold. Good afternoon. How are you? Thriving, I trust? How can I help you?
Well,
very happy, I assure you, to do anything I can for such a dear friend of my father-in-law.
Thank you. I hope you'll excuse my calling and so suddenly...
Of course, with no apologies necessary from Mr. Bold.
This is, I take it, a convenient moment.
Not entirely, to be truthful, since I have a sermon to complete and a pile of ecclesiastical business to be gone over, but no matter, no matter, pray, speak.
Dr. Grantly, I intend to terminate the legal proceedings which I commenced in connection with Hiram's Hospital.
Oh, I see. You intend to do that, do you? You intend to abandon your attack upon Mr. Harding.
Grantly, there has been no attack, I assure you.
Well, we won't quarrel about words. I should call it an attack when a fellow attempts to take away from another every shilling he has to live on, but it shan't be an attack if you don't like the word. That game you've started, then, you've had enough of it. Can't say I'm surprised. Not much of a game, is it, when you happen to be losing and you have everything to pay and you had nothing to gain in the first place?
Forgive me, Dr. Grantly, but you misinterpret both my reason for commencing the proceedings and the cause of my desiring to put a stop to them.
Oh.
But never mind that. I came to tell you of the decision I have taken, not of my motives. And as I have done that, and as you are a busy man, I wish you good day.
One moment, Mr. Bold. One moment. This conversation should perhaps have been left to our lawyers, but in view of the fact that you have given me your information, you will be good enough to hear my response.
Very well. I'm in no hurry.
The situation, Mr. Bold, is this. You have humbugged a number of old fools at the hospital and tricked them into believing there are vast sums that are theirs for the taking. You have somewhat ostentatiously declared that it is your duty as a man of high public virtue to protect these old fools. You have exposed a very worthy gentleman who once counted you as a friend to all the ignominy and insolence which the press can heap upon him. And now you find it's more than it's worth, this game of yours. You think you'll finish with it. Very prudent.
Or at least, it would have been, Mr. Bold, had you thought of doing it earlier. But has it occurred to you, I wonder, that we, for our part, may not choose to let the matter go? That we may now find it necessary to punish the injury that you have done to us? We went to great expense to resist this iniquitous attack of yours. We employed the best advice that money could procure. Do you have any idea, Mr. Bold, of the cost of securing the services of the Attorney General, Sir Abraham Haphazard?
No, no idea at all.
I dare say you don't. Negligible as your own lawyer's fees were, you were indifferent to the crushing burden that others might have to endure. But you will know the cost soon enough, Mr. Bold, for it must come out of your own pocket.
Dr. Grantly, it was with the warmest, kindest feelings that I came to see you.
Oh, yes.
But I regret to find that these feelings have been outraged by your response.
Outraged? Yes, they have. For I have shown you that I will not permit my father-in-law to be ruined. And that must be a great outrage to your feelings, I'm sure. The matter will proceed, Mr. Bold, and you will be defeated, as of course you had begun to realize you would be. Word had reached you, I dare say, of Sir Abraham's latest opinion.
I know nothing of Sir Abraham's latest opinion.
Indeed. I have it here, Mr. Bold. This is Abraham's latest opinion. And in it, Mr. Bold, he declares most explicitly that you do not have a leg to stand on, that Mr. Harding is as safe in Hiram's hospital as I am here in the rectory. This is his opinion, sir, the opinion of the first lawyer in the land.
Dr. Grant.
And you expect me, sir, to make you a low bow and to thank you for your kind offer to withdraw the case. Your case is doomed. You knew that well enough before you came here, but you shall lose it in court, sir, and you shall pay the penalty. I wish you good day, Mr. Bold.
Come on, boy. That man is the very devil. Satan on earth. There can be no doubt about that. Oh, insult upon insult. Humiliation, defeat.
Nor is there much comfort to be derived from the thought of my success in love. For that very success has resulted in failure over the hospital.
Oh, John Bold.
Was it not very weak of you, childishly weak, to allow the tears of a pretty girl to undo all that good work of yours? Why did you let your vanquished heart vanquish your head in turn? Why yield everything? Oh, you poor fool. No less foolish, it's clear, for making a visit to Dr. Grantly and being so thoroughly checkmated by him. Well, what must I do now? I must keep my promise. I must withdraw the suit, as I said I would, and then wait to see what Dr. Grantly may throw at me in return. And I must talk to Tom Towers, as I said I would. To London, then.
I have prepared your things for you, Papa.
Thank you, my dear. Very kind.
You have not yet explained to me why you must go. What exactly you intend to do in London?
I intend to see Sir Abraham Haphazard.
Sir Abraham Haphazard?
Well, it is Sir Abraham, as you know, who has given Dr. Grantly an opinion regarding the hospital. It is Sir Abraham on whose advice, if the proceedings should continue, a plea will be made on my behalf, or so it is intended. I wish to see Sir Abraham, ask him if indeed no better plea can be made. For you see, my dear, if the Jupiter is right, if all that can be offered in my defence is that I am a servant of the hospital and not myself responsible for setting the particular sum of money that I receive, well, it is not enough. It amounts to nothing more than a mere quibble. And if I have no better excuse to put forth than that, then I and the hospital must part company.
Yes, Papa.
Yes?
I think you are right
Papa.
You do?
Most assuredly and emphatically.
Oh, dearest Mel, how very good it is to hear you say so. Oh, you see, Mel, I have no wish to stay in this house. I have no wish to draw my income, not if I am to be spoken ill of.
I agree, Papa.
Oh, well, then I must be right.
You won't, however, get agreement from Dr. Grantley.
I won't, that's true, but it can't be helped, I'm afraid.
Will he go with you to London?
No, Eleanor, I think not. I think I shall be off very early tomorrow, before the Archdeacon could possibly be ready.
Yes. Yes, that might be best, Papa.
I will inform Dr. Grantley of my intentions. I must. But I will do it this way. I'll write a note to him, but arrange that the note is delivered to the rectory only after I myself have set off for London. Yes, good. He's almost bound to follow me, of course, once he has received my news. But if I can steal a march on him, perhaps I can do all I need to do in London before he catches me up. I must try it, anyhow. If the Archdeacon forestalls me, well then, I'm almost assured of failure in my mission. For the Archdeacon, in my experience, has strong powers of persuasion. Were he to have the chance to interfere, I would find it hard to resist. He'd tell me I have no courage for the fight, no strength of character, no resolve. All of which I'm sure is true. Else why should I so strenuously be seeking to keep clear of him? Oh. Weak as I am, though, I think I've made the proper decision. What's that saying? Everyone knows where his own shoe pinches. Yes. Even Septimus Harding.
The garden will be hard to give up.
Yes, it will. But we shall give it up and carry on. Have you thought yet where we should move to?
Well, I still have the living at Crabtree. We might go there. The house is very much smaller, though. So is the garden, of course.
Papa, it doesn't matter to me about the garden or the house or anything. So long as you can get away from all this turmoil and unhappiness. Papa?
The train is late.
No, Papa.
I think it is, truly. Oh, Eleanor, if Dr. Grantley finds me here, then we're doomed.
I am certain he is still in his bed, Papa. Well, now see, the train is coming.
Oh, so it is.
Papa?
Yes, Eleanor?
I have some news for you, which I was intending to tell you yesterday.
Yes, my dear.
Well...
But if you intend to tell it, you shall have to be quick.
I am engaged to be married, Papa.
Engaged? My dearest Nell.
Rochester!
Am I right in thinking that it is Mr. John Bold to whom you are engaged?
Oh, yes, Papa, of course, Papa.
Well, you have my blessing.
Oh, thank you.
Recent circumstances may have created a small rift between him and me, but it'll mend, I'm sure. Your engagement will help there.
I hope so, Papa. You must get on board, Papa.
Yes. Eleanor, the man you have... Oh. The man you have promised to marry is an honest man.
Yes, Papa.
Right thinking in the main. And where he is not, a good wife will supply the deficiency. You are fortunate, my dear.
Yes, Papa.
But he is doubly so. Goodbye. Sweetest Nell.
Hope to find Mr. Tom Towers in an indulgent mood. Knowing Mr. Towers as I think I do, I dare not be too hopeful. I do begin, though, to wonder whether I might have been rather indulgent myself with regard to Eleanor and... Oh, but it was hard. And the tears streamed from her eyes, and her hair fell loose and disheveled, and she pleaded on her father's behalf with such eloquence and in such distress. It was hard not to yield.
She is very lovely. And I am to marry her. But I wish I had not let myself give in over the hospital. I wish
I... Here we are, sir. The temple, sir.
Have you breakfasted, Bold?
Yes, thank you. Hours ago. Are you busy?
Oh, rather. But not so much so at this precise time. This is my leisure hour of the day, if I can be said to have one.
I'm sorry to be encroaching on
it. No.
But I want to ask you, Towers, whether you can oblige me in a certain matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's in connection with this lawsuit that I've been engaged in.
Oh, yes.
Concerning the hospital, you know, at Barchester?
Yes, I know.
Well, I've abandoned the whole thing.
Oh.
Yes, I've given it up. Needn't trouble you with all the details, but the fact is that the conduct of Mr. Harding in this affair... Mr. Harding is
the fellow in charge of the place. The one who does nothing and takes all the money.
I never said that about him.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, his conduct has been so excellent, so unselfish, that I find I cannot allow the lawsuit to be brought and Mr. Harding suffer further anguish. Nothing should be done now, in my opinion, until such time as the wardenship of the hospital falls vacant.
Oh, yes. And when it falls vacant, the position will be filled before you know it, and the same injustice will pertain.
I suppose...
You see, Bold, we never stop hearing about the vested rights of incumbents, do we? Yet it strikes me that in a case such as this, it's the poor and needy who have the vested right, if they could only get it, while the incumbent's so-called vested right is unequivocally and demonstrably wrong.
Well...
I have to say, Bold, I'm sorry you're giving the matter up. The lawyer's fees will cost you a bit.
Yes, a few hundred, but I can't help that.
Very philosophical of you. It's refreshing to hear a man talking of his hundreds in so indifferent a fashion. Oh, have you seen this? Modern Charity, a short treatise by Dr. P. Anticant.
Anticant? Well...
Yes. I suppose it was only a matter of time before the good doctor lent his voice to the debate. What he's saying here, essentially, is that our predecessors did very much in the way of charity, but that we manage very little. And he adduces your hospital as the perfect example. Here, you can keep it.
Thank you.
Oh, and what about Mr. Sentiment's latest offer? Have you seen that?
No, I...
Well, it's a treat in store. It's called the Almshouse.
Oh, is it?
It's a direct attack on the whole system. There are going to be 20 instalments. And the first number's very good. Well, first numbers always are from Mr. Sentiment. Oh, here. You can keep this, too.
Thank you, Towers.
A very powerful man is Mr. Sentiment.
Powerful indeed.
You may be assured that now that England's finest novelist has found himself appalled by the state of the church's charitable institutions, the reading public will very soon be sharing his dismay. Instalment number one, you'll be pleased to know, contains the familiar hyperbole and excessively strong colouring. He didn't make inquiries of you, did he, for his background material?
No, he didn't.
Oh, well, the great Sentiment must have visited Barchester itself. The story concerns a clergyman, an ugly, foul-mouthed widower with a strong propensity towards evil. In charge of an almshouse, this creature is. And the old men who are unfortunate enough to be in his care are doomed to starve on sixpence farthing a day.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear, indeed. It's a sorry tale.
I do indeed remember you, Mr. Harding. The last time you visited us, there was a book of sermons you were having printed.
Oh, you're very close. Music. Church music.
Music, yes. Are you doing another book, Mr. Harding?
No, this is quite different business, which I am almost certain will require me to stay the night.
Oh, follow me. I have a room with a view of St. Paul's that can't be bettered.
Ah. Well, Bold... It's been pleasant to see you, but one must get on. Stuff to hand in at the Jupiter for a start.
Yes, of course. Towers, I have this favour,
oh,
which
Come with me, if you don't mind, and ask it while I'm walking. You know, Bold, you'll kick yourself for dropping this lawsuit. You could have won some glory from it. And, of course, it's all gone too far anyway. The fire which you started, Bold, it's too fierce to be quenched now. The building can't be saved, and as the timbers were rotten anyway, the sooner it goes, the better, I say.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. But for my own part, I feel that I have been in the wrong.
The wrong?
And therefore I shan't be involved with the matter any more. The favour I have to ask of you, Towers...
Oh, yes. The favour.
...is that you cease your involvement with it also.
Mine?
The pieces in the Jupiter have been very strong. Very forceful.
They have hurt Mr. Harding quite deeply, but I thought if I could explain to you that he was not personally to blame for the situation at the hospital, the articles might be discontinued. Do you think they might?
My dear fellow, I really cannot answer for the Jupiter.
Perhaps not, but if you saw that the articles were unfair, unjust, you could endeavour to put a stop to them. You could do that, could you not? If you chose.
You flatter me, Bold. But you are mistaken.
Oh, come, come. You wrote those articles. I have no doubt that you did. And very well written they were. I'm asking you to desist from writing any more on the subject, or if you find that you must write more, that you abstain from any personal allusion to Mr. Hardy.
My dear Bold, you are a friend of long standing, and I have a sincere regard for you. I hope, therefore, that you will not take offence when I tell you that no one connected with the press can, with propriety, allow interference.
Interference?
Even if I was in a position to ensure that certain remarks were kept out of the Jupiter.
And are you not?
Even if I had this power, it would be a very great wrong to use it. If one is employed in writing for the public press, one cannot then be at the mercy of private motives. A newspaper, a good newspaper, must be independent, and so it is with the Jupiter. The weight and authority of the Jupiter is too great, dear Bold, to be moved by personal considerations.
I see.
Well, Bold, I must hurry on. I think we have finished our business.
Yes, I think we have.
Are you coming my way?
No, Towers, I'm not. Farewell.
Does Sir Abraham know you, sir?
Oh, yes. Well, at least he knows of me. Do you think it might be possible for me to speak with him?
Sir Abraham is in court at present.
I see.
And then he is due at the house for the third reading of the convent custody bill.
Oh.
What I suggest, sir, is that you go to the house and leave a message for Sir Abraham there.
I shall do that.
Thank you.
I never thought I'd see the day when the head of the bar, the legal advisor of the Crown, stood up in this house and attempted to legalise indecent assault upon the bodies of religious ladies.
Excuse me, sir. Are you Mr. Harding, sir?
Yes, I am.
I have a message from Sir Abraham Hathaway.
Ah.
He says he will see you tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Oh. Very well.
At 10 p.m.
So late?
10. In his chambers.
I have done what I could. I have pleaded with Tom Towers as I promised Eleanor I would. And I have failed. Indeed, I have failed. And failed utterly in this whole business. I set the thing in motion, took it far enough to ensure that Mr. Harding was made miserable for life, backed out at the very moment when some progress was imminent, and then found myself quite powerless to help poor Harding out of his plight. In truth, I could not have managed it worse. I inflicted hurt and wretchedness on an innocent friend, but stayed my reforming hand just when I might have reaped some reward for myself. Dr. Anticap, Mr. Sentiment, not forgetting the Jupiter. The cause is a very great one now, and I could have been at its forefront. I might have become a celebrated and respected figure in the capital, new vistas, lofty heights. But all hope of that is gone.
Did you pass a pleasant night, Mr. Harding?
Pleasant enough, thank you. And I shall need to spend another night here, if that is possible.
You may see out the year with us, should that be your wish.
Ah. Also, I wonder whether you have a copy of Bradshaw that I might borrow.
Certainly, Mr. Harding. One moment.
If I had the courage, I would have chosen another place to stay. It is quite likely that Dr. Grantly knows that I have visited here on previous occasions, or if not, we'll discover the fact before departing Barchester. But I think I would rather have him collaring me here than setting up a manhunt through the metropolis. There's no possibility, I feel, that he departed yesterday. If he did, he would for certain have found me by this time. Unless...
Oh!
Good heavens!
What if he took the night mail train and arrived in the early hours? What if...
Bradshaw, where would we be without him, eh?
Thank you.
Waiting around for hours on station platforms, I imagine.
Yes. Has another clergyman come here who travelled by the night train?
No, not one.
Well, I'm going out within the hour. If a clergyman by the name of Dr. Grantley should arrive during the course of the day, and if he should ask for me, would you please inform him that I will be back here this evening? Rather late. I need not, I suppose, have left the hotel so soon. If Dr. Grantley travels today, the earliest he could reach Paddington, so says Bradshaw, is 2 o'clock. But who knows what measures the Archdeacon might take. A message could reach the hotel this morning by electric telegraph, or a letter could be delivered there by hand, each commanding me to return to Barchester immediately. And who knows but that, coward as I am, I would not feel constrained to obey.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you.
Are you interested in attending the service, or do you merely wish to walk around the abbey?
Well, I'm not keen to walk around. I should prefer to attend the service.
Of course, sir. Unfortunately, sir, it doesn't start for another 3/4 of an hour. But if you would like to come in anyway...
Yes, I think I would.
That'll be tuppence, then, please.
I still have the living at Crabtree Parva. In all, I suppose, there will be... £150 a year, but not much more, I fear. Oh, Septimus Harding, you are minded to give up £800 in that lovely house, and you and your daughter must manage on a mere 150, if indeed it is possible to manage on so very little. I don't think till now that I have really grasped what leaving the wardenship entails. Of course, Eleanor will sometime be married, but until then, I have no wish that she and I should be dependent on John Bold, not least because he himself would, to some degree, have been responsible for our situation. And after she is married, well, since I shall be on my own, I must manage on my own. But £150. This is a very hard step to be sat on. I only left at last when I was driven out by hunger. I'd very much like a mutton chop and potatoes, please.
Mutton chop, potatoes.
So I went to a place I had passed the previous day in the Strand. Oh, and a sherry, please.
A sherry?
If I may.
Mutton chop, potatoes, sherry.
I must tell you, Eleanor, that I didn't particularly want the sherry, but I believe one is expected to order something in that line when dining at an inn, is one not? It was a vile drink when it came, and the cutlery was not as clean as one might have wished. And there was a young fellow who came in and who conversed with the woman who had served me.
Oh, thou cockman, eh?
On the other hand, the mutton and potatoes passed muster, and I did derive some comfort from the thought that I should not encounter Dr. Grantley at such a location. But altogether, it was not the most eligible spot to spend the evening, so I decided to decamp.
Your cigar, sir?
Oh, I won't, thank you very much. Ooh. Perhaps you'd like to keep it for yourself.
Oh, you're too kind.
On the advice of the serving woman, I went to the smoking room of a nearby cigar shop, whose atmosphere, despite the strong smell of tobacco, I found much more congenial.
Will you have a cup of coffee, sir? Or would you prefer sherbet?
Sherbet? I rather imagined that sherbet should only be taken when one is sitting cross-legged, so I opted for coffee. And after I had drunk it, and declined a game of chess with the waiter, and turned over a few pages of Blackwood's, I stretched myself out on the sofa. And very comfortable it was.
9:30?
Yes, sir. Will you have another cup of coffee?
No, thank you. No, I must be going.
Oh, Eleanor, fancy waking up from my sleep to discover that after a day or more of waiting and inactivity, I had barely half an hour till my appointment. I fear I got myself into something of a sweat, rushed out of the cigar shop, thought about getting a cab but couldn't immediately find one, walked exceedingly fast to Lincoln's Inn, and arrived 20 minutes early, finally contriving by dint of strolling up and down that pleasant place to be precisely punctual. And then, at last, I met with Sir Abraham Haphazard.
So, Mr. Warden, our trouble about this lawsuit is at an end.
I very much hope so, yes.
Oh, there's no doubt. It's all over.
Is it?
Haven't you heard? They've withdrawn suit.
I see. I was aware of the possibility.
Yes, excellent news for you, is it not? You may trouble yourself no further now.
Well, I'm not so sure, Sir Abraham.
I'm sorry?
I wish to seek your advice.
My advice has already been given, Mr. Hart.
The truth is, I am ill-satisfied with the matter as it stands.
Oh?
Nor does your news of the withdrawal of the suit make things at all easier for me.
Oh.
You see, I cannot help but take the view that Hiram's Hospital is not at present administered in accordance with the will of its founder.
Institutions such as the hospital never are, Mr. Harding, for circumstances must needs alter with the time.
Perhaps, but I fear I cannot yet persuade myself that the hospital's altered circumstances give me the right to £800 a year. Mm. So, Sir Abraham, since I have never read John Hiram's will, and would probably fail to understand it if I did, I very much want you to answer this question. Am I, as warden of the hospital, legally entitled to the proceeds of the property?
Are you entitled to them?
Yes. Is the £800 per annum mine by law?
By law? Well, no. I can't exactly say. Not in so many words. The issue is an exceedingly complicated one, which is the reason for my being brought in to offer my opinion. But why should you be concerned with the question at all, Mr. Harding, when you now know that the lawsuit has been abandoned?
Well, I ask the question, Sir Abraham, because I may wish to resign my position.
Resign it? Give it up in time?
Yes. Did you see the articles in the Jupiter?
Oh, my dear man, you can't possibly wish to resign on the Jupiter's account. That's quite absurd. Have you consulted with Dr. Grantley on this matter?
No, I have not.
Well, would it not be best to defer any decision until you have done so?
No, no, absolutely not. This matter can't wait.
Not even a few hours?
No.
So... Of course, if you have private means which are sufficient for your needs...
I have no savings, Sir Abraham.
Then how on earth do you mean to live?
Well,
Mr. Harding, you have sought my advice, and this specifically is it. The measure you are contemplating is extremely serious, and it is one for which there is not the slightest necessity, since no one now questions the justice of the case. You should do nothing, nothing, until you have talked with the Archdeacon. For in my not inconsiderable experience, a man is seldom the best judge of his own position.
A man is the best judge of what he feels. I'd sooner beg for my bread than go against what I feel is right.
I see. Well, Mr. Harding, perhaps you've derived all the benefit you can from this discussion.
And another thing, Sir Abraham.
Yeah?
You say no one questions the justice of the case. That's not true. I question it, and I am the most important witness against myself. It may seem strange to you, it certainly seems so to me, that I should have spent 10 years in my happy home, and that in all that time my conscience offered no question or complaint, was only woken from its slumbers when others began to make a noise. But it is awake now, and I must obey it. I came here tonight in the expectation of asking you to abandon my defense. I know now that there is no lawsuit, and there is therefore no defense. But it is, at any rate, as well that you should be informed at first hand of my decision. From tomorrow, Sir Abraham, I shall cease to be warden of Hiram's Hospital. I thank you, sir.
Mr. Harding, you will sleep on this, won't you?
Oh, I hope to do so, Sir Abraham, for I have lain awake on it too many nights since the affair began. Goodbye.
Come in, come in.
Thank you. I'm sorry it's so late.
Oh, well, Mr. Harding, you can't be blamed for the passing of the hours. Your friend, Dr. Grantley, is here.
Ah, really?
Yes, and his wife. They're waiting for you in their rooms.
Papa, I thought you were never coming back.
Forgive me, Susan, but the Attorney General would only see me at 10, and great men will have their own way.
So you've seen him, have you?
I have.
Oh, that's most unfortunate, Warden. It really is. It's not customary, you know, for clients to go directly to their counsel.
Is it not? Oh, well, I've done it now. And Sir Abraham didn't seem to find it so very strange.
Oh, Warden.
But, Papa, what did you say to Sir Abraham?
Well, I asked him if he would be good enough to explain John Hiram's will to me.
Explain it? He has already done so in the 95 pages of his opinion.
I mean explain it in a way which might assure me that I am entitled to the money I receive each year.
And he did that, I trust.
No, Archdeacon, he didn't. He couldn't. So?
Yes?
I have resigned the wardenship.
Oh, Papa.
Resigned it. Resigned it. Good. Heavens, but the whole business, the lawsuit, it's already been settled.
Yes.
Papa!
Settled, do you hear? All that is required of you, Warden, is that you carry on quietly at the hospital. Carry on exactly as you've been doing. £800 a year, no work to do. Perfect.
Yes. You must be very tired, Susan. Wouldn't you like to go to bed?
No, Papa, I'm not tired.
But she is distressed. Very distressed. Warden, tell your daughter you'll change your mind. Promise her you'll not resign.
I'm sure Susan won't ask me to break my word or to do what I know to be wrong.
But, Papa, it would be madness to resign. What would you live on?
Well, God that feeds the young ravens and so forth.
Fish! If the ravens persisted in refusing the food that God gave them, they wouldn't live very long.
Think of Eleanor, Papa.
I do think of Eleanor.
For her sake. For my sake. Put off your decision till our return to Barchester. Till you've seen the bishop. Dear Papa.
But it is for your sake and Eleanor's that I have made my decision. I could not endure it, you see, if my children were ashamed of their father.
So instead you will destroy Eleanor's prospects forever. And all because some scoundrel writes an article in a newspaper. Good heavens, Warden, say you'll not resign.
But I shall resign.
You shall not. The bishop won't allow you. I'll see to that.
I shall resign.
Then you shall be ruined. Ruined! How will you pay the monstrous expenses incurred by this case?
I don't suppose they will be that heavy, Archdeacon, given that the action has been abandoned.
Oh, they will, my dear. Believe me, one doesn't keep the Attorney General up till the small hours and escape free of charge.
I shall sell my furniture.
Furniture?
Come, Archdeacon. You know you never expected Papa to pay the cost.
Well, I have done my duty in this business. Indeed, I have done more than my duty, have I not, Susan? I have left no stone unturned to make things easy for your father, to ensure for him a life of peace and security. And what thanks have I received? My advice has been systematically rejected. I have been slighted. He has gone behind my back. So, I am afraid, my dear Susan, that if he chooses to ruin himself, ruin your sister too, I cannot help it. I have nothing more to say.
In that case, Archdeacon, I wish you a very good night. Good night, Susan.
Good night, Papa.
Good heavens.
Barchester! Barchester!
And not too soon. I feel as if I'd been away for a month.
Ah.
Papa!
Eleanor!
Oh, are you well, Papa?
Well, I'm a little tired, but very well. How did you know I was on this train?
I didn't, Papa.
You've been coming down here looking out for me, sweet as snow.
Was it all satisfactory?
Oh, yes, it was satisfactory.
Perhaps, Harding, if you've not changed your mind about leaving, have you by any chance changed your mind?
No, Bishop, I haven't.
Well, in that case, perhaps you'd like to live here.
Here?
We should be able to find a comfortable suite of rooms for you somewhere in the palace, I'm sure. You could come and be my resident chaplain.
Me, your chaplain? What use would I be?
I'm not sure I like the word use, Harding. You'll join me in a glass of wine?
Thank you.
The point is, you'd have a roof over your head. And I'd have good company.
You're very, very kind.
Nonsense.
But I couldn't accept.
Oh. Here, wine, Harding. Why couldn't you accept?
I wish to be able to support myself. I don't intend to live on charity.
It wouldn't be charity, though. It would be friendship.
Oh, Bishop, that's all I want from you. Friendship. Such as you and I have shared for so long. To your good health. And to friendship.
No, Miss Eleanor. There's nothing left for me now. My days of comfort are behind me.
Bunce, I'm certain that's not true. The hospital will provide you with all that you need.
No, no. The hospital can do nothing for me now. Not with your dear father going. No happiness, no comfort. It's all over for me in this world.
But you have many years ahead of you.
No, miss. I hope I haven't at any rate. After what's happened here, all that remains is to forgive my enemies and your father's, if I can forgive them, and then to die.
Oh, Bunce.
Well, Bunce, are the men assembled?
They are, Your Reverence. All except George Bell, of course.
Of course.
A week or two, no more, and he'll be dead. But he still won't give up thinking about money. All those hundreds of pounds he reckons the hospital owes him. The old fool. But then he's no worse than the rest. Are you ready to speak to them, Your Reverence?
My dear friends, I've much I would like to say, but this will not be a long speech. You, all of you, know by this time that I'm going to leave you. There has been an unfortunate misunderstanding between us, and now...
We never wanted you out, Mr. Harding.
That's right, Abel Andy, that's right.
We never thought it would come to this.
When I signed the petition, well, in fact, I didn't sign it as such. I put my mark, but...
Quiet, will you? Let his reverence speak.
My friends, I'm quite certain that you did not wish to turn me out. But I thought it best to go. Please be assured that I'm neither angry with nor offended by anyone in the hospital.
Well, you've every cause to be. These men have ruined you. They've ruined themselves, ruined me.
No, no, Bunce. Nobody has been ruined.
We didn't mean you no harm.
Of course you didn't, Handy. In this country, we're all entitled to seek our rights. And you did no more than that. My friends, very soon I will be leaving the hospital. But my lodgings will not be so very far away. So I will see you often. And some gentleman will come to take my place. And I'm sure you'll be as well looked after as I always hoped you were while I was with you. My best wishes to you all.
It is some time now since my father-in-law left the hospital. No one has been appointed warden, though Mr. Harding himself is often still called by that title. I gather the Archdeacon had a number of suggestions for the post, but the bishop, unusually, would not be bullied into accepting his son's advice, believing, perhaps, that Mr. Harding might eventually be persuaded to withdraw his resignation. But the former warden shows no sign of doing that. He's quite contented with his lot, or at least is sparing enough of his daughter's feelings and mine to give that impression. I have come back to the hospital today. There are only 8 men now. The rest lie in the churchyard. The grounds have grown distressingly disordered and ugly, and the warden's garden, this place, which was once so neat and pretty, so well cared for, has now become a wilderness. It was here, one evening, that I came upon the warden as he played his music and told him of my purpose regarding the hospital. Oh, what a sorry affair. And how much I regret that it was ever started. Yet there are times, I confess, when I regret as much, if not more, that I abandoned it as I did. That I withdrew from the chance to make my mark, win fame. But I chose another path, a quieter, more secluded path, and I have obliged myself to stick to it. For better or for worse.
Warden by Anthony Trollope was dramatized for radio by Martin Wade. Septimus Harding was played by Alec McCowan, Eleanor by Juliet Aubrey, John Bold by Douglas Hodge, Dr. Grantley by Stephen Moore, and Mary Bold by Janet Moore. The Bishop of Barchester was played by Peter Howell, Bunce by Norman Bird, Mrs. Grantley by Julie Bond, Chadwick and Tom Towers by David Collins, Sir Abraham Haphazard and Gazy by Derek Waring, Crumple by Garard Green, Handy by Gavin Muir, and Sculpit by Jonathan Keeble. The Warden was directed by Cherry Cookson.